Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the World View. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and my name, well, I already said my name. You know who it is. Welcome back to the show, folks, where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and as another week launches, we will dive in to some incredible news. But I want to start out with something I observed earlier this week as I was playing Mr. Mom and caring for the children. As my extremely attractive audio engineer was busy on a few projects around, so Dad ends up home taking care of the kids. And I was thinking a little bit about responsibility. Actually, I was thinking a lot about responsibility because the marriage covenant that was granted to man by God, the Creator, is really a gift from God because it enables a man to put himself under an authority, a standard, that of his wife, a standard outside of himself. And this helps a man to restrain himself from many of the behaviors that he may have explored in his misspent youth. But under the covenant agreements with his wife, he's under her authority. And so with that outside authority, that helps a man to be civilized. And I realized as I was playing Mr. Mom this week that children, when children are a part of the marriage, children then put the man and the woman under a third standard, a third authority, and that's the authority of the responsibility to take care of the children. So the husband and wife have each other's authority to keep them restrained and civilized. And then the children come along, and then there's that third influence, that third authority. And I was just amazed and was thanking God for the gift of my children who have helped me and my extremely attractive audio engineer, to just be more than we could have been and to be more like what we should be, which is walking in the steps of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And maybe I'm thinking too deeply, or maybe I'm not thinking clearly, but it just struck me this week that the entire marriage, the way God set marriage up, is just an incredible gift, and shows His clear wisdom in knowing how to rule His creation, not by lording it over them, but by simply making us responsible to one another. And in that regard, responsible to God and helping us all grow up and act like adults, for crying out loud. Okay, so there's my deep thought for the week. Now, I heard a disturbing rumor. I don't know if this is true, but I heard that 100-watt light bulbs are going to be banned as of January 1st, 2012. Could this possibly be true in a free country? I'm a little bit I'm ready to start hoarding 100-watt light bulbs. Is this true or is this just a rumor I heard? I caught wind of this right before I went on the air. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but it's quite disconcerting, to say the least, that free Americans will not be able to purchase an incandescent 100-watt light bulb as of January this year. And well, it's just another signpost on the way to second world status that our leadership seems to be striving for. And let me just posit right now my dissatisfaction with the whole schema regarding green energy and that whole thing. You probably knew that. Let's get to the news. Do I have anything else of deep import? I'll get some of that later. I want to start. I I had an email from a friend of mine, and it sounds like perhaps he took my my take on the whole birth certificate issue a little bit personally. And I just I want to start out right here from Esquire magazine. Did any of you see this past week? They had a fake news story by a reporter stating that Jerome Corsi's birther book was pulled from the shelves. And in the article, Esquire magazine does exactly what I said they were going to do. For anyone who questioned anything about Barack Obama, now they're going to be classified as kooks. Because what they did in this phony story from Esquire is they attributed a book to the author of Where's the Birth Certificate, Jerome Corsi. Great guy. I've talked to him on the phone. They said that here's what the article from Esquire magazine says. Now tell me this is not the Alinskyite tactic, in effect, that I said would be the order of the day throughout up until Election Day. And perhaps for all of time, at least until we get things under control here. That means you and I, the normal people, instead of the freaks and the deviants who are steering the country off a cliff and driving us straight to hell in a handbasket. In the article from Esquire, they say, quote, Corsi's earlier best-selling work, Unfit for Command, Swift Boat Veterans Speak Out Against John Kerry, and Capricorn 1, NASA, JFK, and the Great Moon Landing Cover-Up. Now, when I read that, I happen to know all of Jerome Corsi's books, and I know that he didn't write one about the Great Moon Landing Cover-Up, but this is just a fine example of the Alinskyite tactics that I described last week, now being put into effect against one of America's great investigative reporters. Whether or not he's right on the birth certificate, I don't know. And if you've listened to the broadcast, you know I always felt that the Democrats would produce a birth certificate, a forgery, or the original, or a real. I have no idea. But I knew that it would be passed off no matter what. Because the powers that be, well, they are the powers that be, and they're in power. And so hanging our hopes on the birth certificate just wasn't wise, in my opinion. And now we see Mr. Corsi roundly ridiculed throughout the liberal intelligentsia right there in Esquire magazine, the pinnacle of liberal deviant intelligentsia. And, well, we'll do all we can to help Mr. Corsi recover. I hope he sues them and wins a lot of money. But there you have it. So don't speak out and don't doubt our dear leader, Barry Ho. Barack Hussein Obama. Don't doubt him, because if you do, they'll be fitting you for a tinfoil hat, whether you need one or not. And I know no one in this audience needs a tinfoil hat. No, we've already got ours. No. No, certainly not. But let's get to the serious news, because, well, the first story I opened with, it was a joke, supposedly, from Esquire magazine. Not really a joke. Kind of a joke, but at the end of the joke, instead of a punchline, they stick a knife in his ribs and twist it. Doesn't really qualify as humor, in my opinion. But let's get on to the pressing news of the day. I've got a story from the Montgomery Student Council. And I don't know if this is Montgomery, Alabama, Montgomery, Virginia. I just don't know. But I don't think it matters. It's from the Washington Examiner online. And in Montgomery County, a Montgomery County executive, I call them the student council for obvious reasons, but he was on the executive council there at Montgomery County. He proposed eliminating taxpayer-funded coverage for erectile dysfunction drugs in Montgomery's employee health insurance program. However, now the council has stepped in, and under a new council blueprint, county employees would be eligible for only 6 doses of such drugs a month. Previously, employees had no limits on the number of little blue pills they could get. This makes real good sense, right? I mean, how many doses does your average public school teacher need, or your average city worker, Well, they're going to limit it to 6, and this is just good conservative thinking, in my opinion. Let's see. The jurisdiction, by the way, there in Montgomery County, faces a $300 million budget shortfall, and student councilman Mark Elric, Democratic councilman at large, says, quote, "This should not be trivialized. I know it's an easy headline, but this is a quality of life issue. This can affect relationships. Eliminating coverage for the drugs, by the way, folks, would save $400,000 annually." So 10% of their budget shortfall goes for Viagra for your public school teachers and government workers, I do believe, here in Montgomery County, either Alabama or Virginia, somewhere here in the great United States of America, the former great. So this is an example of where we are. While the world melts down around us here in America, we're focused on, well, I can't even say it. There's something I want to say, but I can't say it because I do try to make this a family-friendly show. But just so you know where people's minds are in the city councils, the student councils, and the executive councils of counties across the country, a conservative victory, I guess, cutting it from no limit to a limit of only 6 doses. I guess that qualifies as conservatism these days, but we hold a higher standard here at the Weekly Worldview, and we will give you examples of that. As we go forward on the broadcast today, let's go to the war file. This is truly earth-shaking news, in my humble opinion. Dateline Washington from the Associated Press. President Barack Obama is endorsing the Palestinians' demand for their future state to be based on the borders that existed before the 1967 Middle East War. And you know what surprised me is that the Barry Ho came out and said, look, this has always been the opinion of American political leadership. I'm just the first one to come out and say it. And I'm not sure who he's been hanging out with or if he's been having seances. I don't know. If he's only talked to Jimmy Carter, that could be the case. But I did not know that this was the thinking of American political leadership, always under the surface. But Barry apparently does. And I think later we'll find out that he agrees with Osama bin Laden, posthumously. Thankfully enough, but for this to happen, for this now to have taken place, for our president to openly say, to basically call for the destruction of Israel, to return them to the borders from which they were attacked over and over and over again before the Six-Day War, for him to come out and say that, all I can think of is, you know, these radical liberals. They don't even try to hide their radical liberalism anymore. They just come right out and say things that imply the destruction of the only free state in the Middle East and our ally and Israel, by the way, the Jews who've been persecuted. We all know what happens when wicked leaders succumb to their bloodlust for the Jews. But it seems that's where Mr. Obama wants to go. And he'll have plenty of company, as we'll see. In fact, let's go to this story from WorldNet Daily. Big story on Muslim democracy. This is from the Ivory Coast. We reported on this months ago when the United States, the United Nations, and pretty much the whole world decided to install a Muslim in Ivory Coast over the Christian who won the election. There's a quote here in the article. Listen to this, folks. This is Muslim democracy. Quote, "Once we take control, we're coming for you," unquote. That's the message Christians in the Ivory Coast got from Muslims during a long-fought dispute over the nation's presidency, the election that was apparently won by a Christian candidate, but that result was overturned following intervention by the United Nations and the United States, who insisted that the Muslim candidate be given office, which now puts the Muslims in control in the Ivory Coast. And the Christians are, needless to say, fairly nervous, and as well they should be. But when you give the people what they want, when you give the masses, the majority, what they want in a Muslim country, well, that means they're going to start killing Christians, burning churches, killing Jews, burning synagogues. That's if there are any synagogues left in these backwards countries. And so the Muslim Spring, or the Arab Spring, as it's been called, is going to be bearing fruit. Well, it's already bearing fruit in Egypt, where they're burning churches, running Christians out of town. It'll be bearing fruit in Ivory Coast before too long. And it wouldn't surprise me, folks, if the Arab Spring ends in a nuclear winter. Right, if it keeps on raining, the levee's gonna break. And it's raining. It's Arab Spring, after all. Spring is the season of rain. Now let's go to Syria from the Jerusalem Post, from the War File. Damascus is where the Apostle Paul started his ministry, and Christians have worshipped there for 2 millennia. But for many Syrian Christians, recent attacks on Christians in Egypt have highlighted the dangers they fear they will face if the Syrian regime succumbs to the wave of uprisings sweeping the Arab world. Protests erupted in Syria 2 months ago, triggered by anger and frustration at widespread corruption and lack of freedom in the country, ruled with an iron fist by the Assad family for about 50 years. Although some Christians may be participating in the protests, church institutions have not supported them, because apparently there are still a few church institutions who have the good sense to know that we simply cannot live in peace with an Islam that is hell-bent on their caliphate and the destruction of Israel and the Christian church. We simply cannot live in peace with people who want to kill us. And so I'm sure there are some young, airheaded Christians on Facebook and Twitter who are participating in all of these Arab Spring uprisings. And my, won't they be chagrined when their family is imprisoned or their head is lifted off their bodies. But no one's ever been able to say that the Christian community is not filled with stupid, gullible people. Certainly is, just like any other community. Do we have anything else from the Jerusalem Post article? Syria's Christian community is believed to make up around 6% of the population, down from 10% in the middle of the 20th century. Christians have equal rights and the same restrictions on political freedom as Muslims, apart from a constitutional stipulation that the president of Syria must be a Muslim. Oh, so that's... That's your Arab Spring, as the levees swell and the rain continues to fall there. Let's go to Ynet News out of Jerusalem as well. Pro-Palestinian activists have formed a new Facebook group calling for mass marches on Israel's borders. And that started a couple of weeks ago, and I imagine it will continue every weekend after the holiest of holy Friday prayers that the Muslims, you know, the Muslims, they all get in the... that famous bottoms-up position as they bow down to Allah and plot the destruction of Christianity and Judaism. Well, this group on Facebook called the Third Palestine. I thought they got rid of this Facebook group. Who knows? Maybe the kids at Facebook can't keep up with the agitators working with the militant left, who seem to be working with the militant Muslims now to drum up strife and discontent, which isn't very hard in countries like Syria and Egypt and all the other Muslim hellholes around the world. But now the communists have gotten in there and taught them how to organize and protest in the streets. And now this group, the Third Palestinian Intifada, urges Arab activists in countries neighboring Israel to storm Israel's borders in reaction to the recent Nakba Day events. Nakba Day is the day of catastrophe that they celebrate. Well, I mean, I don't know if you'd call it a celebration. Muslims don't seem like all that happy of a group. I mean, their women got to be miserable, for crying out loud. And the men, well, I don't know. It seems like they want to fight more than they want to just exist in peace with their neighbors and trade and exchange cultural influence. They just don't seem to be as interested in that as they do in fighting and killing the infidels. That's you and I. We're the infidels. Anyway, several Facebook groups urge a third mass popular uprising against Israel. Various reports in the Arab media, including the almighty Al Jazeera, which is, I believe, the second holiest TV network. Is it the third? Yes, the second holiest television network in all of Islam is Al Jazeera. And they and other Arab media outlets suggest that activists in Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon plan to march on Israel's borders, and that Palestinians from the Gaza Strip and the West Bank are also expected to stage such marches maybe indefinitely, or maybe until the Jews are pushed into the sea. And then what are we hearing now? I mean, you see what's happening this week. Pakistan could fall to the Islamists before the year is out, before the month is out. Who knows what's going to happen in Pakistan? The Arab Spring, as the levees swell. All right, but let's move from over there and events that could, at some not too distant point, impinge on the daily life of the average American. Let's move on to the daily life of the average American. We'll go to Pompano Beach, Florida. This is from CBS TV in Pompano Beach. At Blanche Eli High School in Pompano Beach, Florida, holding hands is against the rules. That's right. Holding hands at this high school is against the rules. Now, two girls who are dating found out that indeed holding hands was against the rule when they say the principal threatened to suspend them. The mother of one of the deviant lesbian slut high school girls, the mother of one of these girls says her and her friend were holding hands, and the principal approached them from behind and removed their hands from touching one another. Her daughter, she says, happens to date a girl. She happens to date a girl? What does that mean? My daughter happens to date a girl? Does that mean she woke up this morning and walked out of the house and suddenly she walked into a girl and they were dating? It just happened. She just happens to be dating a girl. Got up on the wrong side of the bed. I don't know. She says that her daughter's being discriminated against, of course, because she's a deviant freak and a threat to society. That's right. I said it. Homosexuals are a threat to the good order of society. And if we allow high school kids, to experiment with this deviant lifestyle, they could be scarred for life. Their psyches could be damaged for life, and they could end up lifelong deviants. But that's all beside the point. What was I trying to get at? Now the superintendent of the school, he says this has nothing to do with discriminating against anyone's freedom to love whoever they want to love and be whoever they think they want to be. The superintendent said the rule is the rule, and it applies to everyone. So here we have another government educator. Well, he's not even doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. I personally don't think holding hands should be against the rules anywhere. And of course, you know how I feel about public schools. I don't think they should exist. So to argue over what the rules should be at the public schools is like arguing over the deck chairs on the Titanic, so to speak. You know? I mean, your kid shouldn't be in the public schools, number one. But if your kid's 17 and falls in love with someone, and perhaps they're courting and considering marriage, I don't think it's outside of the norms of society, and I think it's acceptable that they should be allowed to hold hands. I mean, I might be a prude, but I'm not that prudish. But if your kid's a deviant pervert and holding hands with another boy or another girl, well, that should be stopped. And for the right reasons, the children should be told that the lifestyle is dangerous, it's a threat to society, and that it's criminal, frankly. It's criminal. There you go. But if your kids are in the public schools, well, I don't know. Let me get to this story from NBC in New York. A nude photo of a 13-year-old New Jersey girl has been passed around a middle school, and students have been warned that they must delete it from their cell phones. Police were called to Eisenhower Middle School. Can you imagine what Dwight Eisenhower would think if he went to Eisenhower Middle School and hung out in a group of 14 and 15-year-olds and saw what they were texting each other on their phones? Can you imagine? Eisenhower would probably take a chisel and a hammer, and he would take his name off the school. Let's see. They were called to Eisenhower Middle School in Wyckoff, New Jersey, after teachers investigating an argument among four students found the nude photo of the 13-year-old fellow student on one of the students' cell phones. So they've told all the kids that you have to delete this picture from your cell phone. But they have no plans to inspect the cell phones of the students. They have no real way to enforce what they've said, and they don't really care. As long as the kids are having fun, the kids will be kids. You know, here, we got a box of condoms right over here. Yeah. So there, if your kids are in the public school, if you're allowing your children to be put into public school, you're sinning against your children, you're sinning against God, not to put too fine a point on it, and I certainly wouldn't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable about the fact that you are corrupting your own children. The gift God gave you, you are corrupting that gift. I mean, you're worse than the fellow who, remember the parable about the man who the Lord gave a talent and he hid it in the ground? And when the Lord returned and the man said, I knew you were a harsh judge, so I buried your money and I kept it. It's all here. Here's what's yours. You're worse than him because you're taking what he's given you and you're corrupting it and making it sinful, evil. So get your kids out of the public school, for crying out loud. Be a man. Grow up. Face reality. All right. Now, what do we have? Now, we go into the culture file. And, well, this is more on the homosexuals pouring out of the closet. I hate to keep bringing it to you, folks, but they just keep pouring out. And as they pour out, believe you me, they're doing everything they can to stuff normal people into the closet. And it's long been posited by Christians and conservatives alike that the homosexual community seems to have an agenda to indoctrinate our children. And for that, we're issued tinfoil hats and we're called crazy and intolerant, homophobic and bigoted and all the rest. Well, let's go to Albany, New York, from LifeSite News. Sodomy advocate Daniel Villarreal has criticized the homosexual movement's knee-jerk reaction against accusations of meddling in public schools. LifeSite News says, while gay activists usually deny that they want to indoctrinate children, Villarreal has said, quote, let's face it, that's a lie. We want educators to teach future generations of children to accept queer sexuality. In fact, our very future depends on it. Wow, powerful. And, you know, it's like I said with Barry Ho at the beginning, with this 1967 retreat and the destruction of Israel. The deviants and the freaks who are hell-bent on killing you and I and our children and themselves, frankly, they're taking their masks off. They must realize that they have a big enough plurality of the dim-witted electorate to just come right out and say who they are. And here is an advocate of a deviant lifestyle who's coming right out and saying, yes, we want to indoctrinate your children. He says, in fact, our very future depends on it. Because you know something, folks. Despite the advancements of medical science, homosexuals cannot reproduce in any normal fashion. So they reproduce by indoctrinating, lying, deceiving, and molesting children. That's how they reproduce. Not to put too fine a point on it, and I certainly don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. Villarreal, this sodomy advocate, he pointed to the tactics of a gay activist group whose name I can't even say because it's just perverted and sick. This group that fought against a recent Tennessee bill prohibiting classroom discussion of homosexuality in grade school. So just try to get your brain around that, all you parents who are putting your kids in the public school. In Tennessee, the buckle of the Bible Belt, they have to introduce a law to prohibit the discussion of homosexuality in grade school. Folks, there shouldn't be any discussion of sexuality in grade school, let alone homosexuality. But then again, I digress, because there should be no grade school, at least not government run. But I've gotten off track here. This bill was going to prohibit this discussion of homosexuality and handing out gay paraphernalia to school children. They want to ban that because that's what's going on. Well, Mr. Villarreal, he points to this organization for which he's a spokesman, and he says, quote, are we recruiting children? Yes, you bet we are, unquote. So there, the mask is off. He says, why would we push anti-bullying programs or social studies classes? Have I not warned you people about this? Anti-bullying programs, homosexual indoctrination is what it is. He says, quote, why would we push anti-bullying programs or social studies classes that teach kids about the historical contribution of famous queers unless we wanted to deliberately educate children to accept queer sexuality as normal? Well, there you have it. Need I say more? There is more, believe it or not. He says, I and a lot of other people want to indoctrinate, recruit, teach, and expose children to queer sexuality, and there's nothing wrong with that. Unquote. From his own writings. By the way, folks, 58% of New Yorkers polled said they now back homosexual marriage. So I guess now that more than half of the people are deluded and deceived, and so now the masks can come off, and the anti-Semites can come out and say they want to destroy Israel, and the homosexuals can come right out and just say it, we want your kids. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug, and I'm back. That's the song that sodomy advocate Daniel Villarreal will hear upon entering the pearly gates for his judgment. Well, I don't know if they let him into the pearly gates for judgment. Probably keep him outside with a body condom or something. By the way, just to end that story, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Republican, has lobbied lawmakers in Albany just this past week to overturn the traditional definition of marriage in New York State. So that another example of fine conservative thinking there on behalf of Mr. Bloomberg, a Republican. All right, now I've got to do a story about priests. Does this never end? I'm going to need a shower after this show. The Dateline Amsterdam from the Associated Press, the Associated Press even. The Dutch Catholic Church and the Salesian Order are investigating revelations that a Salesian priest served on the board of a group that promotes pedophilia. And he served on the board of that group with the full knowledge of his boss there at the rectory. The Salesian Order's top official in the Netherlands, a delegate named Herman Spronk, has confirmed in a statement that the priest, identified as 73-year-old Father Van B., served on the board of Martijn. Martijn or Martine? I don't know. Some pile of homos over in the Netherlands. This group, Martijn, is a group that campaigns to end the Dutch ban on adult child sex. The group is widely reviled, but not outlawed. See, now there's the problem. Yes, I mean, some things could be widely reviled and certainly not made illegal. Let's say organizations that promote cauliflower. I would revile that group, but I would say we could tolerate them, allow them to exist, because some people might like cauliflower, and that's just fine. But when a group is advocating criminal behavior, they should not only be widely reviled, they should also be outlawed, imprisoned, and quite possibly executed for promoting capital crimes. Yeah, that I said it. They're promoting a capital crime. An adult who seduces or molests a child should be put to death. That's all. Anyway, back to this priest. In an interview, the Salesian Order's top official in the Netherlands, Herman Spronk, said that he was aware of Father Van B's pedophilia and membership in the group that promotes adult child sex, and he was even aware of two instances where the priest had been fined by police for exposing himself in public. But, said the top official in the Salesian Order, he said, I don't think that was sufficient reason to ban him from the order. That's the exposing himself in public, the membership of basically the Netherlands answer to NAMBLA. That wasn't enough. That wasn't sufficient to ban him from the order. He said, removing someone from the order is something you would only do in the case of a grave moral transgression, such as rape. Is that right? Is that what it takes these days for a priest to lose his job? I mean, it's tougher to get rid of a priest, apparently, than it is a government worker, for crying out loud. Well, wait a second. Maybe that's not true, because we had a president who was credibly accused of rape, and we couldn't get rid of him. In fact, he's riding high, at least in all outwardly appearances. That's Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, he raped Juanita Broderick, but that wasn't enough. All right. Let's see. A little disconnected this week, folks. I apologize. Maybe I'll get back to some of my deep thoughts. I just want to take credit, by the way. I want to take credit where credit is due. I think I have a story here. Yeah, here we go. Gingrich. I want to take credit because weeks ago, right here on the Weekly Worldview, we called Newt Gingrich. We called it, folks. We called the campaign dead in the water. We said his career was over when he posited some incredibly ludicrous answer about his affair while his wife had cancer. And he said, well, look, I didn't lie under oath about it. Anyway, we called him dead weeks ago. And now he has publicly committed Harry Caray, apparently right on This Week with David Brinkley, or whoever's hosting This Week, or whatever show it was. I don't watch any of that garbage. But apparently he's ended it. What do we have here? He was glittered this past week in Minneapolis. Yeah, another homosexual just pouring out of the closet. Again, I apologize, folks, but the news is what it is. Yeah, Newt was glittered. A homosexual activist, Nick Espinoza, poured a box of glitter over Newt Gingrich's head last week at a book signing, shouting, "Stop the hate, stop the anti-gay politics," It's dividing our country, and it's not fixing our economy, as the glitter spread down over Newt's head and all over the table, and it's booking everything. So Newt was glittered by this. Apparently that's this homosexual advocate. He goes around and he pours glitter on so-called conservatives. He should have realized that if him and Newt just sat and had a glass of wine together, Newt would probably end up leaving his wife for this guy. I mean, it's Newt Gingrich, for crying out loud. Anything could happen. All right, I'm not a big fan of Newt. Do I have anything else? Let's see. Espinoza, the homosexual glitter advocate, he told ABC News last week, he said, quote, Newt has a long history of anti-gay politics and has chosen to focus on divisive social issues instead of working to fix our economy. I don't think a free will adulterer like Newt has any ground to stand up while telling others who they can and can't love. And you know what, folks? Unquote. Let me return to my heterosexual accent, making the segue from the phony homo lisp. You know, the fag has a point here with Newt. I have to admit that Newt Gingrich has pretty much... He's given up any right he ever had to question anyone's morality on anything. Maybe that's too strong. I don't know. Newt should just get out. He's gotten out. And we called it right here on the Weekly Worldview. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate... the applause. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Now back to more homo news. What's going on here? People are going to start thinking that I'm oddly obsessed with homosexual news, and I must admit that I am, because I really believe that there are a few bellwethers that we must keep our eye on. The first is adultery. Adultery's been decriminalized. It's tolerated. It's even encouraged. There's even a company that advertises on TV how to teach you to have an affair and to hide it. So adultery's the first one. It's been gone for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. Adultery's been decriminalized. The second is homosexuality. I mean, once that wall comes down, I mean, where do you go? Drugs, legalizing drugs, that's another bellwether we've got to keep our eye on. And that's happening all around us, at least here in Denver, Colorado, where... I don't know, by the end of the year, marijuana could be our number one export crop. Medical marijuana, yes. And then there's Israel. Israel is the bellwether. How a nation, how a person feels about the Jews and their right to exist and to have a homeland is another bellwether that we have to keep our eye on. And while all the bells are ringing right now, the bell is tolling. It doth toll for thou. Okay. Yeah. But I have this another story on homosexuality. Again, I apologize. But from Washington, D.C., the Associated Press, researchers commissioned by the nation's Roman Catholic bishops to analyze the pattern of clergy sex abuse have concluded that homosexuality, celibacy, and an all-male priesthood did not cause the scandal. I mean, how could anyone say that with a straight face? I mean, you have to pay a spokesman a lot of money to stand up in front of a camera and deliver this. And I imagine that the researchers commissioned by the nation's Roman Catholic bishops did indeed receive large sums of money to make everyone understand that certainly had nothing to do with homosexuality. Or the fact that they don't allow priests to get married. And that they're all guys and they live in the same house. No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. The study instead said that the problem was largely a result of poor seminary training. Well, that's certainly a part of it. You know, one of the parts of seminary training should be keep your hands off the boys. And maybe that wasn't a part, but apparently they're trying to update the curriculum there at the in the rectory there. They said also they had insufficient emotional support. These priests who turned into pedophiles, they had insufficient emotional support. And now this is a point from the study that I actually agree with. The social upheaval they confronted as pastors in the 1960s had a lot to do with this. Crime and other deviant behavior increased overall in the United States during this period when the rate of abuse of priests, by priests, was climbing. So, yeah, folks, when society decides that it will tolerate adultery and homosexuality, more and more people are going to do it. Priests, bakers, candlestick makers, they're all going to do it. Because, you know, we're all flawed, and we all have a tendency to indulge unhealthy appetites. And when society makes you think it's okay, well, more and more people are going to do it. So I agree with that point. But I think the fact that they don't let the priests get married, and that they're all guys and they all live in the same house, I think a lot of them turn into fags, especially when they have that weak seminary training back there in the rectory. All right, we're back, folks. We're rounding third and headed to home, and I know, folks, it hasn't been a very funny show, and you haven't heard my extremely attractive audio engineer in the background laughing at my jokes. Sorry. And I'll tell you, it makes it hard to do a program. The thing is my extremely attractive audio engineer is caught up in so many projects right now, and the raising of the three children, and the cleaning of the house, and all of the things that she does to bring this program to you. That she just doesn't have time to be in the studio as much as she would like to be.
Sorry.
Well, that's okay. If I tell a joke, will you come back and laugh? All right. She's gone back to work. There she goes. Back to work. I'm flying solo here. From the Politics File, Washington, D.C., with the $14.3 trillion debt limit reached last week, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner began borrowing money from a new source, government worker retirement funds. Yeah, this is from WorldNet Daily. The organizer of a grassroots campaign to persuade Congress to deny any hike in the debt limit sees the action by the administration as a trap. He says it's the Treasury's latest scam, their latest debt scam. He says the goal of Barack Obama and Tim Geithner is to force Congress's hand to raise the debt limit. That's according to Joseph Farah from WorldNet Daily. He created the No More Red Ink campaign, and he says that this is just the latest trick by Obama and Geithner to steal money from retirement accounts that must be repaid. You see, if they steal the money and it has to be repaid, then they can come to Congress and say, well, look, we stole this money and we've got to pay it back. You've got to raise the debt ceiling. And besides, have we told you that if the debt ceiling is not raised, that an earthquake is going to start in New York at about 6 o'clock on that day, and it's going to roll across the whole country, and the entire world is going to collapse into chaos and destruction, and it will be the end of days. Funny how everybody made fun of that preacher last week for calling the end of the world, I forget when, but nobody's making fun of Timothy Geithner when he's the biggest Chicken Little on the planet. The whole sky is falling if we don't allow him to borrow more money. I agree with Mr. Farah. This is the latest scam. He says, Farah says, quote, they'll do anything not to curtail current and future spending levels. It's a shell game designed to coerce Congress into allowing unlimited borrowing. Farah explained the more Geithner is allowed to borrow, the more raising the debt limit is perceived as a necessity, if only to repay the money that Geithner is confiscating from other sources. Yeah. They're stealing the money in order to set themselves up to get more money. It's a kleptocracy that we live in, folks. I have a quote here. There's another quote from Joseph Farah. And I like Joe Farah, don't get me wrong. Here's what he says. He says, quote, there's only one way to stop this abuse of the Constitution with certainty. And that is to persuade Republicans in the House of Representatives to say no to a hike in the debt limit. And Joe, love you like a brother, okay? But you're kind of hitting all around the bullseye there. What we need to do, we can't rely on the Constitution, we can't rely on the Republicans, and we certainly can't rely on the House of Representatives to correct the problem of outright theft. Mr. Farah, we need to call theft theft. And theft existed long before the Constitution. It existed before the Republicans or the Democrats. It existed before the House of Representatives. It's theft. And it's a punishable crime, and we need to punish these criminals. And the first step in punishing them is, we need to stop them from stealing all our money, Mr. Farah. And I understand that Mr. Farah wants to operate in a civilized manner within the constraints of society that have been established, like the Constitution and the House of Representatives. And that's all well and good, but we need to make the House and the Republicans aware of just fundamental morality. It's really no more complicated than that. And then we need to enforce the law against theft, if that hasn't been decriminalized since we went on the air today. All right. So everybody's up in arms about the end of the world. Timothy Geithner, the preacher, the nut job, the embarrassing lunatic from last week. And everyone seems to be obsessed with the end of the world. Cannes Film Festival took place over in France this past week, and a movie called Melancholia apparently wowed the crowds there. I don't know if it won any awards because I don't really follow that type of thing, but according to this article from, I don't know, somewhere in Canada, I don't even know who this is. Oh, Reuters Wire, I'm sorry. Speaking of giving credit where credit is due, from the Reuters Wire, this film, Melancholia, had the Cannes Film Festival buzzing with excitement. It's about the end of the world. The director, Lars von Trier, according to this article, he stunned Cannes 2 years ago with a sexually explicit and brutally violent movie called Antichrist. And apparently last Wednesday he told a press conference that he sympathized, quote, a little bit, unquote, with Adolf Hitler, at which point he was asked to leave the festival, probably going to participate in some demonstrations in the Arab Spring over there. He found himself a home away from home with the Philistines and the Syrians and the Egyptians and the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and all that. But all of Cannes was abuzz because the film's about the end of the world. And everyone wants to be involved. And I asked, my daughter asked me, why is everybody, because some of her friends, little heathen friends from the neighborhood, asking her about the end of the world because they know she's a Christian, and you know, she said, I don't buy into any of this. But she said, all my friends seem to want to talk about this. And I said, I know, Nicole, everybody wants to be a part of some big event. And some people are so desperate and short-sighted that they'll even want to be a part of the end of the world. They want to participate so that they're part of something big. And I don't buy it. I don't buy into Tim Geithner's story. I don't buy into this other guy's story. And I haven't seen Mr. Nazi's movie here. And I probably won't see the movie. But everyone's preparing to be a part of the next big story, the end of the world. Yeah. In fact, we've got hedge fund managers are now investing in, well, listen to this story from The Observer in England. It may seem a little odd that in 2011 anyone's thinking about putting money into assets like farming that would have seemed attractive in 1911, but there's something in the air, namely fear. One hedge fund manager and others like him envision a doomsday scenario catalyzed by a weak dollar, higher than you think inflation, and an uncertain political climate here and abroad. The pattern, according to this Observer article, began to emerge sometime in 2008 as a British hedge fund manager, his name is Michael Burry, the former head of the now defunct Scion Capital group, threw his hat into the productive agriculture land with water on site. That's what his hedge fund, that's what he thinks is the next big bet. He says productive agriculture land with water on site is going to be valuable in the future. He said that back in 2008. And now 3 years later, the purchase of farmland in both America and abroad by outside investors has increased so much that in February, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City warned against the possibility of a farmland bubble. Yeah, Kansas and Nebraska reported farmland prices 20% above the previous year's level and are on pace to double values in 4 years. That's productive agriculture land with water on site. I don't give a lot of investment tips, but this sounds like a good one. I mean, whether the levee breaks or not, whether it's the end of the world or the dollar crashes, or we find out that Barack Obama is actually from another planet, no matter what happens, one good bet has always been productive agriculture land with water on site. I suggest you get into it. But, you know, everyone's betting on a catastrophe. Yeah, and there seems to be a general buzz or an obsession with this catastrophic event that's going to change all of our lives. But I'm afraid, folks, I hate to break this to you, I'm afraid we're in for something far less glamorous than the great catastrophe. I think it'll be more like a slow, inexorable slouch toward Gomorrah that ends not like Mad Max, but more like, Mel Gibson himself, actually, now that I think about it. Just fairly embarrassing, distasteful, disgusting, and not all that glamorous at all, and not even that big of an event. It's just like you wake up one morning and you're Spain. After 40 years of allowing the moral infrastructure of the country to crumble, you know, I heard a man say recently that there's a time of trouble coming for our children, or for our children's children. And I thought to myself, what man in all of history who said those words was not absolutely correct? Yeah. Because there's always a time of trouble coming for every one of us. But it's more personal than the catastrophe that the media fears, or that Tim Geithner is trying to push, or that the apocalypse doomsayers are trying. It's a more personal thing than that. It's life. It's life. And in this world, life ends badly for every single one of us. So we're all going to witness our own personal end of days. But it's not going to be a great glamorous catastrophe on the silver screen. It's going to be a fairly distasteful and embarrassing moment when you face the living God. And I hope you have an advocate on that day. And I suggest Jesus Christ. Look into it. All right. Let's see. We're almost out of time. I'm running out of time. Why is Soros spending over $48 million funding media organizations? Well, this is from Fox News. This is part of their big two-part series. Since 2003, Soros has spent more than $48 million funding media properties, including the infrastructure of news, journalism schools, investigative journalism, and even industry organizations. Soros funds foundations that fund other foundations in turn, like the Tides Foundation, and apparently he owns the Columbia School for Journalism, apparently. It's unbelievable. Oh, he funds. He doesn't own it yet. He funds the Columbia School of Journalism, who I've had a problem with them for quite some time, and, well, now George Soros rears his ugly head. Columbia is headed by Lee Bollinger, who also sits on the Pulitzer Prize board and is director of the Washington Post, and he gets some kind of paycheck from George Soros. By the way, George Soros is a Nazi collaborator. Yes. So we see Barack Obama this week announcing that the general position of the free world is that Israel should retreat to their indefensible 1967 borders. He's basically saying it's time to kill the Jews. That's basically what Barack Obama said. He took the cork off the long, simmering, festering bottle of bile that the world has wanted to spit out against Israel for the last 50-some-odd years, 60-some-odd years. And here we find out that all of Barry's buddies and the journalism schools and the media that we all conservatives agree that the media is liberal and biased. And now we find out that they're funded by a genuine Nazi collaborator. Not someone who just sympathizes with the Nazis, but George Soros, since he was 14. When he was 14, he participated in the bureaucracy in Hungary that deported Jews to the death camps and confiscated their property. Right up till now, that was when he was 14 in Hungary. Right up to now, his active participation in the coming full court press to establish Palestine and to destroy Israel. Here's a quote from George Soros in a 60 Minutes interview from December of 1998 about working with the Nazis to confiscate Hungarian Jews' property. Soros said, quote,
"Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there. Because that was, well, actually, in a funny way, it's just like the markets. That if I weren't there, of course, if I wasn't doing it, but somebody else would. Somebody else would be taking it away from them anyhow. And it was, whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator. The property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property, so I had no sense of guilt." Unquote.
That's George Soros, who funds the liberal media. Let's see, from the War File. Are we about out of time here? I apologize. We're going just a tad long, folks. Bin Laden, from the grave, agrees apparently with Barack Obama. He made a speech shortly before his death. He praised the mass protests that have toppled and shaken longtime rulers across the Arab world. This is according to the Associated Press. Bin Laden's message, released to militant websites last week on audio tape and addressed to the Muslim nation, represents an attempt by the terror leader to remain relevant, apparently, before he was shot. That's according to the AP. The reporter who wrote the story is probably funded by George Soros, for crying out loud. But anyway, it was kind of ironic that on the same day Barry Ho came out and praised the Arab Spring, that Osama bin Laden came out and said about the same thing, interestingly enough. All right, now, real quickly, let's go to Dayton, Ohio, from the Culture File. A new People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals billboard in the Dayton area will compare the China Arnold murder case to the cooking of animals. Now, you may not be familiar with the China Arnold murder case. China Arnold, a 31-year-old mother, was convicted last Friday of the aggravated murder of her 28-day-old daughter, Paris Talley, who died in a microwave oven in 2005. The case against the mother is ongoing, and jurors are considering whether this mother, who killed her 28-day-old baby, should get the death penalty. That's where the case is right now. That's how confused justice is that we've got a woman convicted of putting her 28-day-old baby in a microwave and killing the child, and the jury has to deliberate as to whether she should get the death penalty. Well, this case is very big news in the Dayton, Ohio area. And so PETA is now going to release a billboard that will feature two images, a mother pig nuzzling her piglet and a person about to place a pork chop in a microwave oven. And the text read, "Everybody's somebody's baby. Go vegan." PETA spokes dyke Ashley Gonzalez said, quote, "We don't want to be insensitive. Our hearts go out to this baby," said the PETA spokesman. And of course, it leaves us all wondering. It begs the question, are you talking about the pig or the girl, Miss PETA spokesdyke? Gonzalez said, "It's an issue of extending compassion to other species. Billions of baby animals are violently killed each year by the food industry." That's just, that's another signpost on the road to either second world insolvency or perhaps straight to hell. Perhaps. Just another mark along the highway. From the Justice File, from CNN, authorities want to take DNA samples from Unabomber Ted Kaczynski in connection with their investigation into the 1982 incident in which seven people died after taking Tylenol capsules laced with cyanide. You all remember the story, right? So, what's the problem? Well, the problem is, to date, Kaczynski has declined to voluntarily provide DNA samples. I mean, do you need any larger example of an incompetent, backwards, upside-down justice system than the fact that we can't seem to get DNA from Ted Kaczynski when we think he might have killed some people with cyanide and Tylenol? It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable, but that's where we are. And as we sign off today, we're going to go to Stephen Hawking, well-known atheist and allegedly very smart fellow, a physicist from what we understand. He said in an interview with the Guardian newspaper published last Monday in England, he said, quote, "I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That's a fairy story for people afraid of the dark." Yeah. That's Stephen Hawking. The reporters here say that Hawking's stance on religion has hardened significantly since the publication of his seminal work on the cosmos, A Brief History of Time. In his latest book, The Grand Design, he said a deity no longer has any place in the theories on the creation of the universe. It's a fairy story, you see, for people who are afraid of the dark. Why do you think Stephen Hawking's position against God has hardened so significantly? I think he's a lot like Pharaoh back in Egypt. You remember, if you've read Genesis, it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Well, it's like my pastor says. God didn't come down and sprinkle hardening dust on Pharaoh's heart. God was just God. And Pharaoh hardened his heart, and Stephen Hawking has hardened his heart. And you know what? We'll get to find out on Judgment Day if Stephen Hawking is afraid of the dark, because he's going to go to a place that's very dark and very hot. And we'll be glad to see Stephen go there. And I guess that's all I've got. I'm going to sign off, folks. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. I want to thank American Right to Life, Personhood USA, TheologyOnline.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.